And welcome to the Many Faces of the Able podcast. I am your host and producer, Jessica Angelic. This podcast provides education, general knowledge, and a platform for those who feel voiceless. This podcast is also available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. If you would like to contact me outside of this podcast, you can do so by going to the blog called The Abler at https://seetheable.blogspot.com, and we can connect there and possibly work together in the future. I hope you enjoy the show and future and present episodes thus far now streaming on the podcast. Was made by GarageBand, music by GarageBand. Hi guys, and welcome to the Many Faces of the Able podcast. I am your host and producer, Jessica Njolik. Today is a very special day because today we're and activating our crossover topics again with our very first crossover topic of 2020, which is on the documentary Crip Camp. So this will be like my personal background information about the show and personal introductions and whatnot. So let's get right to it on the documentary of Crip Camp. Crip Camp, a disability revolution. In the beginning of the film, we were introduced to former camper James LeBret, who is also a writer and director on the documentary and the screenplay. James has spina bifida and went to the summer camp in 1971. The camp was located in the Catskills. The camp had an early start in the beginning of the 50s with a very traditional layout, later adapting to a more free-spirited atmosphere. Hippies were now running the camp. The name of the camp was Camp Jeanette. The idea of the camp was to give a place to be kids for the next 14 days, share stories and experiences among the campers and counselors. The camp was described by the campers as a kind of a utopia. There wasn't any anarchy involved or even existed. When you were a Jeanette, you were equal among your peers. At Camp Jeanette, people were experiencing personal assistance, built in within the camp, both of whom took part in physically assisting their fellow camper in some way. This was a first-time experience for most of the campers because the Disabilities Act was not a reality. While at camp, all the campers realized that their lives could be better. The following is a quote from one of the former counselors. "We didn't want to be sidelined by anyone. We wanted everyone to be heard." That was by Judy Newman. Judy also talks about how when she grew up and she was being pushed around in the neighborhood by kids in the neighborhood, a child stopped them and said, "Are you sick?" That's when Judy personally realized she didn't want to be seen as sick, but rather just as Judy. Jim also had the realization when he returned home to Jared from Camp Jared that he had to adapt to a world that was not made for him. Now, I would like to interject here and say we're going through something like that right now, but at a more extensive level. With someone with a disability, whether it's from birth or something happens and you have a disability later on in life, the world is never going to be made for people like us, unfortunately. And now with the COVID-19, it's a brand new adapting phase for all of us. So that quote is very potent to me. Then we go on to say a little bit about Judy's background. Judy Hammond was born with polio. She's a strong believer in inclusivity. Later, she's become a prominent disability advocate. She created the organization Disabled in Action. Championing for such bills as the 504 and 88, she began her work when she was sued by the Board of Education when she sued the Board of Education for discrimination of New York. What is Disabilities in Action? It is an organization that fights for the civil rights of our various disabled and differently abled communities. We fight for employment, education, transportation, housing, and so on. DIA's first call of action came in 1972 when they championed for the Rehab Bill of 1972, which prevented people with disabilities to be institutionalized because of the fact they had a disability. This is where we were also introduced to the institution Willowbrook, which is, if you guys do decide to watch this film, or have already watched it multiple times like I have, please, I'm going to put this out there as a caution. If you don't watch it beforehand, especially if you're someone that's an activist like myself and would like to share it publicly within your channels or what have you, please watch it beforehand so you can prepare yourself, because that scene with Willowbrook is very profound and intense. So please take note of that and make sure you prepare yourself prior to showing it to anyone else, especially if your domain is a public domain like mine. At this time, President Nixon denied the bill, so this compelled 50 DIA activists, Judy leading the group, to do a demo in front of Nixon's headquarters, shutting down the city that day. In the spring of 1973, Berkeley became the first state to start independent living centers for people with disabilities. In 1977, DIA showed up again after the bill was signed, but Section 504 was not enforced due to the fact that lobbyists wanted changes made to the original regulations of Section 504. In 1977, DIA went to San Francisco to demonstrate for the health, education, and welfare of the disability community. There were 300 at that demonstration, including a regional director. DIA had support from various arenas, including the mayor of California at the time. A reporter, the only reporter to cover this demonstration, was by the name of Evan White. Separate but equal happened, and DIA fought harder. On day 15, more DIA activists head to Washington via a U-Haul truck. See, this is what I mean. When people that have unique circumstances and they're disabled, we have to adapt all the time. So that is very, when I saw that in the film, I was like, well, that makes sense. And it's certainly big enough and it has room. I think it's pretty safe considering, I mean, it worked at the time. So I thought that was very inventive in that part of the film. Let's see, where was I? During this demonstration, three times that week, the activists went without 36 hours of sleep. Eventually, the end result of this demonstration was not one that DIA wanted. Joe Calafino ignored their little demonstration and their attention, but finally on day 23, of the demo, he caved, and Section 504 was enforced. This demo was later dubbed the Civil Rights Act of 504. In 1988, accessibility for the disabled began to grow. Transportation, structure, buildings, education, and so on. Then, 3 years later, DIA was demonstrating again for the repealing of 504. They were still fighting for the civil rights of our diverse disability communities. In July of 1990, the ADA was signed into law. Now, that's pretty much all the notes and stuff I have on the documentary, but I would just like to go on to say, before I wrap this up, my personal experiences and share my personal opinions. This film needs to be watched. This film needs to be watched among middle school children, high school children, and college children. And you need to have, for younger children that it may be a little more vulnerable to this topic, you need to have in school, in classroom discussions, at least once a month, to check up on the child, especially if you're a teacher that has a child or multiple children with special circumstances or special needs. I know people don't like to use that word, but I'm going to do that because I grew up in this special needs school system. So I know by the time I was a senior in high school, I was only specialized in two classes, gym for obvious reasons, and math because of my dyslexia and learning disabilities. But this kind of thing, it has gotten better, I will give you that, since the act, this, you know, all these bills were passed and whatnot. It is 2020, we're living in a new era right now, where everybody's being homeschooled, going to work school on the computer, doing what they need to do to stay safe, but still keep food in their mouths and a roof on their head. So I don't know how this will affect us afterward as far as the accessibility. I'm hoping at the end of the day, a lot of people that would have shunned or not recognized a disabled person into their community, whether it be a work environment community, a professional community, socializing, whatever the circumstance, I would hope that today it would teach people some compassion and a little more insight into what a disabled person goes through. Because if you're limited to transportation or access to something like, you know, I am, and you have to live with those limitations on a daily basis and adapt constantly, I would hope that it would show a little more compassion to us and maybe start a real conversation like, hey, we want you involved in this. Hey, come sit at our table and let's talk about this. Hey, would you like to join our team at work? That's the kind of conversation I'm hoping films like this and other ideas that grow from this film will happen. Because I think what Judy and Jim James went through back then, it's still happening. And now it's happening at a greater pace because of the fact of COVID-19, I think. People, I think, are starting to realize when they're not panicking that there are a lot of people that have to deal with this on a daily basis. And the two most prominent groups that deal with this on a daily basis are the abled and the disabled. The elderly and the disabled. So, what I hope is that if we come back with this with a different action plan after this is all gone, not just for an action plan for future things like this that are currently happening, but an action plan for how do we make our surroundings more inclusive? How How do we make our surroundings more accessible? How do we make our surroundings feel like we're growing in the right direction? I'm not saying it'll fix every single problem, but if we come to realize after all this that the disabled and elderly people in this community, in this world, do have value and they do have a right to be included and share whatever they need to share, then by God, yes. So I'm hoping this film will help grow us into a new decade, into a new decade of action for our community. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next time with a new show. Bye-bye. Hi, guys, it's me again. I just wanted to jump on here really fast and add to the Crip Camp episode within the blog post, because this is our first crossover topic of 2020 for the blog. Within the blog post, I have linked the two resources for you guys for this film, one being their official website, which is cripcamp.com, and I highly suggest you check that out because they have toolkits if you want to do your own in-home screening. They have toolkits and resources you guys can download. So this is why I say, let's start a revolution of change and movement for us and future generations in the disability community. And we can do this, I think, start with this documentary. Also, I linked their IBD, that movie link thing, in the post as well. So those are two prominent links you guys can check out. That'll be with the information I shared on today's show on the blog itself, along with the file of this episode, so that those that don't follow the podcast, if you don't, you can. It's on Spotify. Just search the Many Faces of the Able podcast. We're on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Anchor FM app, which is a free download. We're on Podchaser as well, so you can simply search us. But I will have the download link to the show with the blog post as well. All right, guys? So that's what I wanted to share with you guys. And just to verify, their official website and the hold on 1 second, I want to make sure I say it right. That's right. IMBD page. So that's all the information on the movie itself. Who produced, who wrote, who directed, the people highlighted in the film, what was discussed, a little synopsis, things like that. So those two links will be with the blog post as well. All right, guys, thank you so much. Bye-bye.